Hi everyone, my name's Amy and I'm an alcoholic. I have the privilege and honor of introducing tonight's speaker. I also have the privilege and honor of sponsoring her. One of the greatest gifts in this program for me is to give away what I've been so freely given. It helps me stay humble and sober. And sometimes I call this one my entertainment. But lately I will tell you that Sarah has been the sponsee that has helped me to reach deep in and just get down to the causes and conditions of why I behave the way I did and sometimes still do. And you challenge me and you brighten my day, and I am so honored, again, so honored and privileged to be your sponsor and your friend, and I love you so much. So here's Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 10/12/14, and as long as I don't pick up another drink, I will have 5 years this October. And that's really a gift, and that's just keeping my feet going forward and doing it one day at a time, sometimes 1 minute at a time. I have, of course, a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor women. I do have a home group. It's Saturday Night Special in Acworth at 7 p.m. Saturday nights. And I kind of am just blank, so I'm letting higher power, God, the mothership, as I like to call it, take over. I think I'm going to start with today. I got to talk to three of my daughters. I've had three kids, and I was not the best mother. I made a lot of mistakes in with them. One of them I put up for adoption when I was 4 months pregnant. I made the decision because I was not the best mother to the other two, and I was homeless. And, the alcoholism and just bad relationships, bad choices, I knew that I could not take on another child. And today I got to speak to all three of them. And that is a blessing. That's a blessing for what I've done to them. And I guess where I want to start off with was, making amends to people. That's so important in this program, and I still make mistakes with them. One of my daughters, I still have a lot of issues with. We talk just basically via text, but today she was asking me some financial advice, which was really an honor because a lot of my background is accounting, and she came to me for that via text, but it's a start. One of the when you make your amends, you also have to sit and listen to what they have to tell you, things that you may have done, and some things are hard. And one of the things that she told me was, and I don't remember this, but I was in a drunken rage, and she's in bed, and I walk in, and I put a pillow over her head, and I'm strangling her and telling her to die. I have no idea why. But I do believe her because I raged. And, I carried a lot of resentments, a lot of pain, even from my own childhood, and a lot of tragedy. So with that, I'm going to kind of start where I came from. I was born in Los Angeles, California, Halloween 1968, so I'm 50 right now. My parents were 17 years old when they got pregnant. They were both in high school. My mom was Catholic. My dad was Jewish. I like to refer myself as a cashew nut. I'm definitely nuts. They really had no reason to get pregnant at that age, but they did. And my mom's family being very really in the Catholic Church, I have an uncle that's a Monsignor, aunts that were nuns, Everything was hush-hush in the 60s, so they put my mom into a maternity home where the baby, me, was supposed to be put up for adoption. And my dad's family were Jewish. My grandfather was an immigrant from Russia. He came here in 1912 when the Bolsheviks were killing Jews with his family. He was 12. And my grandmother, on my dad's side, she was from the South. She was born up in the North, but her family were from the South. And always told that we were under the lineage of Robert E. Lee, so there was a lot of stories there. About 27 days after I was born, since my parents weren't married when I was born under my mom's last name. 27 days after I was born, my parents got married, hence my name was changed. My name has been changed 10 times, and not because of birth only. It has been because of marriages and multiple relationships. That's kind of part of the insanity. I like to refer to myself those days as the jaywalker. I just kept running into that insanity, and I didn't see it. It was with alcohol. It was with relationships, with gambling, you name it, food. I had a bariatric surgery in 2008. I got up to 325 pounds by using food as a mean to relieve some of the pain that I carried. And I haven't always been like this. I still see myself sometimes in a large frame, and I still have those feelings. You take away the weight, it does not change the mind. Geographic locations, you take away that, it doesn't change. You still go with you. So let me get back to my parents. So they get married, and they try to be the best parents that they can. My mom, she took me to ballet. My dad was out on the road all the time. I really didn't know him that I can remember. I don't have much memory of him as a kid, but then I really don't have much memory of my mom. At 2.5 years old, I was attacked by a dog, mangled my forehead. I had 50 stitches, plastic surgery on the right side of my face. I lost my teeth and had surgery on my nose and side of my mouth. I had to wear partials, two teeth. And it was really embarrassing. For me, growing up, you don't get your teeth until until you're maybe about 7 or 8 years old. So I went through school without any teeth. And kids were teasing me. I have a lisp that kind of bothers me. I also have real bad short-term memory. I don't know, some of you may see me in meetings. I'm always writing notes. That's because I don't remember what the topic is. So I'm always trying to write something to remind me in case I need to talk. I've done this all through school. I had some friends that would go to ballet with me. They lived on my street. They were I was really close with them. And again, I was about 6 years old, and they moved to Tennessee. And this was really hard. It was my first time that I felt abandoned. I felt like, they're leaving me. And they came to my school. I actually came to my school. Their parents brought them there. We went to a different school, brought them there, and came up to give me a hug. And what I remember the most out of that was a little boy calling me a girl lover. And I didn't understand that. I was so naive. But, again, that's a form of being teased, and it just kind of stuck with me. When I was 7, my parents got divorced. I had no idea that there was any problems going on in my house. And I just remember sitting on the patio, and my dad is kicking my mom out. And I'm wanting to go with my mom, and my dad says no. I find out later, she has her own issues with addiction, and it's just the relationship had to end. And my father, he raised my brother and me. I think I was scared because when I didn't know my father, and it became just me and my brother, and then I had my dad's grandparents. I didn't spend much time with my mom's side of the family except on holidays. So there were times that they became strangers. However, I do want to interject here, say that I did have three uncles that were raised with me up until the divorce. My mom was the oldest of eight kids, so she raised these three uncles until she moved out, and I was very close to them. When I was 9 years old, I'm going to go into some of the stuff. I do have PTSD. When I was 9 years old, my great-grandmother was murdered. A burglar had come in and grabbed a cross off the wall and stabbed my grandmother. And at this point, I know that I had a fear of the cross. I had a fear of God. And I didn't associate anyway with the Catholic religion, but that symbol had really just caused a lot of fear in me. When I was 14 years old, one of those uncles, I was very close to him. We'd shoot pool. We'd go out and talk. I was having some issues with my parents. My mom had just told me a few weeks before that my father was not my father, which that kind of crushed my world, because he's raising me and I'm living with him. And at this point, I want her now to raise me. This uncle was the only person that I could talk to. And he was murdered. He was 21. I was 14. And this event crushed my world and was pretty much the point where I changed. I went from an innocent child to just rebelling and harming myself. It was the first time that I wanted to die. I wanted to commit suicide. I wanted to go with him. I guess you could say I made a deal with the devil that he could live through me, and I pretty much allowed him to live through me until finally releasing him a couple years ago, and still, it's a slow process. It's still very slow. The alcohol, because I'm kind of forgetting that. My first drunk was when I was 2.5 years old. I'm an alcoholic, I really am. I was 2.5 years old the first time I got drunk. This was on a Passover dinner. I don't have any recollection of it. Again, I'm 2.5 years old. I don't know if this is before my head injury or after. So alcohol, I've always had it. It's been in my family Friday nights. We always drank Manischewitz. But there's this one night where we're standing at the Friday night table during Sabbath, and I'm watching this chalice, the glass going around, and it's almost like I know how that's going to make me feel. I know that's not the first time that I get drunk, but that's the first time that I know that feeling, and I'm anticipating that feeling. I don't remember any feelings before. I'm waiting for it. I'm like, please don't drink it all. In my head, I'm saying, please don't drink it all. And it gets to me, and I feel that feeling, you know. It's like you take that sip, and then you just feel this sensation come through you from head all the way down. And I chased that feeling. I chased that one feeling, because the minute I had it, I felt drunk, and I hate that feeling. That feeling then I didn't like, and then I drank to fall asleep or to pass out. And that was from the age then of 14 after Arthur died. About 2 weeks after he died, some friends and I, we were over at my house drinking. smoking some pot. And I know this is AA, but this is an important part of my story. We were smoking some pot, and my friend, she hustled out in LA for it. She was also 14 years old, but that's part of that community where she lived. And in trade, they gave her this joint, and it was laced with PCP. And I had no idea. That night, I tried to take my life. I ran in front of a car, and my friend, she was able to get me out of that situation. And she took me up to her house. Her mom had called my dad and told him that I was having an asthma attack and that I was having issues because of my uncle's death, and kept me there. After that, I started to notice that when I drank, I would say that I was a lightweight. And I always blamed it on the fact that I had that laced joint. But what I really, when I came into this program and started hearing about this line that got crossed, I'm kind of thinking that maybe that line was crossed at that point. It could have been, because I was using that as an excuse of, now I'm just going to drink to pass out. I started going to clubs with my uncles. I'm going to bring this up because it is important. The first time that I had sex, I was 14, and I had set it up with some older men to meet with a guy that I had met when I was 13 at a wedding, and looked like Rod Stewart, so I was like, oh, this is the guy, and I chased him. So again, I'm 14. He's 29 years old. He should have known better. I'm only 14. I look at it now and I understand that, you know, I could have made better decisions, but so could have the people that set this up. And what I did is, when the date was set, I went into my fridge and I drank two Heinekens because I knew that was going to change how I feel. And I went up there and did what I needed to do. I thought that would change me. I thought that I would feel different after that event. I didn't. You know, then I was just chasing relationships. And so I get married at 18 years old. I was in high school. I was on a dare. I was a neo-Nazi. I was upset at my father at that time. He was skinhead, Nazi swastika on him, and I was going to get back at my dad. He was angry, you know, a lot about the Arthur situation. I usually went to go visit Arthur on Thursdays, and he happened to die on a Thursday. I felt that I could save his life. So I had a resentment against my dad. And this marriage was going to, you know, get back at him. And there was no love with this guy. It was like I had a friend that dared us to get married, and in 6 months, if he did, he was going to run down or streak down the Rose Parade route. And being from Pasadena, it's like, yeah, let's do this. So number one and I get married, and I went back home. Of course, we didn't want anybody to know we were married. It was just a dare. You know, I go back home, and about 2 weeks later, my stepmom, she's stepmom now. At the time, she was our au pair, our maid. And she overheard conversations on the phone that I was married, and she told my father. So I got kicked out of the house, had to drop out of high school, and moved in with my best friend and to her garage with the husband that I really never thought I was going to be with. So we tried to be married, and it didn't work. And my dad didn't really like him. And 2 years later, he paid me off. He said, give you $1,000 if you divorce him. And I took that $1,000 and I divorced him. My dad thought that I was going to stop partying and drinking. That just took me right back into the bars. This time I'm under I'm under 21. I'm in the bars. I have a not legal ID. And I've had that since I was 14. But I meet some guys that shoot pool. And they want to take me under their wing and teach me how to shoot pool. You know? I'm like, okay, this sounds good. So I spent about a year with them, spent my 21st birthday with them. I was so excited when I handed my ID. It was still October 30th, and I hand the bar my ID. And they're like, you're not even 21. Like, oops, sorry. And they said, you need to go sit outside until midnight. So that was kind of a bummer because I really wanted to get my drink on. But I learned how to shoot pool, which is where I ended up meeting pretty much all of my other husbands was on a pool table in a bar. That became my pattern because I became very good at it. And I started going to El Toro. It's a marine base in California. We were driving out there and I thought I'm gonna find myself a husband out there. And we walk in, and I did meet somebody. I got pregnant, and I did lose that baby because drinking and partying. He had gone away to Panama for war. I think it was like for 2 weeks, and came back. And right after he came back, I had lost the baby. And we had planned on getting married, but you know, it was kind of like, this isn't going to work. So I decided to get my head together and drive up to Santa Cruz, California. It's about 300 miles away. Kind of get my head together. First thing I do is I'll walk into a bar, go on the table and shoot some pool, and I meet husband number two. And we are married in 1 week because we knew we were in love and he was going to chase me down south. So I'm like, okay. Might interject that I, at this point, when we met, I was also, I don't know if you call it, I was kind of working as a madam in a brothel. I wasn't doing the guys, but I was taking care of the girls. And this, really, he liked that because he used to go to all the gentlemen clubs when he was in the Army, and he liked that. Until we were in a shootout there, and he decided that I had to leave that. And we moved up to Santa Cruz, California, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks after we're married. I get a call from my grandmother that the bank that we bank with is putting a federal warrant out for my arrest. I've been doing check fraud and taking money, writing checks for cash, and didn't tell anybody this, especially didn't tell him. And he decides that he wants to take the rap on it. And I'm like, you can't take the rap on it. It's my signature, my checks, my ATM card. Your photo isn't on there. I'm running to Mexico. He tells me no. He said, I know we can go up to an Indian reservation up in Wyoming. So we get on the road and we move up to Riverton, Wyoming. And we hustled. We had like no money. We hustled shooting pool. I shot pool. He was the one, he was like the bookie. He was the one that took the money and made sure that nobody was going to hurt me. And we got up there and stayed for a little while. And I finally decided I needed to call my grandmother. And she told me that the bank was giving me till that Friday to come down and take care of the situation, and she would go ahead and pay the bank. This was the third time that she had paid off these situations with me. The first times, two times, were over $10,000 each time, and this time she was done. I mean, my family was done. We then, we come back and then we decide to move. We're just doing all these geographical changes. We move to Laughlin, Nevada, because we're going to go work in a casino and drink and, you know, I have the gambling bug too. This was the first time that his abusive side showed up, and he was put into jail there. So he was paid by my grandmother to leave him, and while I'm waiting for the bus, he gets out of jail and shows up, and we're on the bus and pass by Pasadena. I get off, give my grandmother a hug, and I told her I'm going off with him, and that hurt. Through the years, that's one of those things that, you know, I have to learn that forgiveness with myself, because I left my grandmother there, and she was really sad and scared for me. We had two kids together. We lost one in between the two, and the abuse got worse. It got to the point where he was charged and convicted with attempted murder on me, and I went right back. A couple months later, I took him back, and it just kept going on. Finally, I got brave and left him. And another thing is, I wasn't drinking during the time that we were married, and I had a resentment towards him because I'm raising the children and he's out drinking. And see, my disease wants to be the one out drinking and him be the one home taking care of the kids. So I started trying to control his drinking and telling him you can only have three, because I figured he only got abusive after three. But that's the story that I told myself. Finally, we split up, and I end up right back in the bar and shooting pool. And that's when I met the dad of the baby that I put up for adoption. And at 4 months, I knew I was homeless again. Like I said, I had to make that decision to leave her or leave him. And I have the baby. And after I had her, okay, I lived with the family. They put me in their house. The one that was adopting my daughter, they put me in their house because I was homeless. They put me and my kids in the house for about a month while I was pregnant. And I became really good friends with the woman that was adopting my baby. And after I had had her, she had suggested me to meet one of their brothers that I had never met. And I thought, this is cool. You know, I will go out and it'll keep me kind of close to my daughter and to watch the one that I put up for adoption. We hooked up, and, you know, now it's like, I'm going to marry this guy. I'm going to now be my daughter's aunt. So it took us years to get there. It took us 4 years to finally get married. Now, he was number five. So between there, was he number five? He was number one, two, three, four. Yeah, he was number five. So we break up, and I have a manager who is a Muslim and from Iran and kind of needed some help. And so I sort of helped him. And then I sort of didn't help him because I didn't complete the task. We file for an annulment, and the day that we're supposed to get the annulment, I'm already kind of seeing somebody else, and I have him go to court. And mind you, alcoholism plays into all of this and codependency. He went to the court, and I went to Vegas to get married the same day that I'm getting an annulment. And I call number three after I'm married to find out, how did it go? And he tells me that the judge didn't sign it. So now I'm married to three and four at the same time. And I have to make a decision. Who am I going to divorce first? That's the crazy, you know. I'm not, I'm like. So that one, number four, lasted 29 days. I got the divorce from both of them, and the day after the divorce from the last one, I was married the next day to number five. There was no time really in between any of these, no thought. It was just, I mean, I was really self-will run riot. What is it? Self-will run riot. And pure insanity. I did not see any of this. A lot of it was hidden. I mean, it wasn't hidden. My family, of course, knew all that's going on, except I did not want my dad, being Jewish, to know that I married a Muslim. Later now, of course, he knows that. But I did have that fear. So after number five and I split up, we're both members of the Moose Lodge, and I'm working my way up as a volunteer to be a senior regent. My excuse, you know, that's my excuse, but really it was a bar that I could leave my kids in the booth and I could go drink. And it was really convenient. Let me backtrack a little bit. I used to leave my kids at home alone. I'd tuck them in, a 1- and a 3-year-old, and I would walk over to a bar while they were asleep alone, and I'd go to a bar and drink and party. And sometimes I got home that night, sometimes I didn't. I'm very, very lucky that nothing happened to my kids, and really nothing happened to me. That's a hard one to swallow, but that's what I used to do. So he leaves, number five. We're back and forth, and I hear that he's moving back to where we live in California. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are playing into. I have another grandma that died, and the family is fighting. And I make a decision that I have to leave California. And I, at this time, had befriended my kid's dad's ex-wife. I think they were ex at this time. I had befriended her, and she suggested for me to move to Georgia. And we've only met like once, and I thought, okay, cool, I'll come out here. I picked up my kids and I moved to Georgia. I thought that nobody would know that I'd been married 5 times, that I would come out here and I'd be able to stop drinking. I wouldn't have the Moose Lodge. I can just change my story. I get out here. The first thing we do is we go down to a bar in Carrollton, and I'm right back being myself. Not even 24 hours in Georgia, and I'm right back who I am. I did end up not getting married for 2 years, but and I also kind of stayed sober, or dry, I guess you can say, for 2 years. I stayed out of the bars. I did end up moving to Cobb County, and that was a good change. It was actually a great change, and I stayed sober, and until I met number six. And we ended up in bars and married about 2 months later. You know, they tell me this story and I want to believe it. I'm lonely. I'm don't have good self-esteem, and they tell me what I want to hear, and I believe it. And I just run with this story. And I did stay married to him for 9 years. That's the longest. It ends up that, we ended up going to this bariatric surgery together. We both were at this point, food addicts. The alcohol didn't play much. He didn't drink, but there were also other situations. And he had done something to a family member, and I had to make a decision to leave that relationship. And it was a very hard decision, but I had to choose the family member over that relationship. And at this point, I do exactly what I do. I go into a bar on a pool table, and I meet number seven. And this is where I think that God kind of intervened and seeds were planted, because he's off and on one of us. He brought me to meetings. I would just come as a supporter. You know, I kind of listened to what you guys had to say. And, I met people in here. I was even told by one girl that she was going to save me a seat. I thought it was really cool. I'm coming and I'm sitting with my husband as a supporter, and she's going to save me a seat to sit next to him. I now know what that means. Took me a while to figure that out. Man, it gets sober here in a minute. Okay, so anyway, at the same time I meet these truckers, and you know, they're in the bar, they're drinking, but the one thing that they have is truckers have God. And they, okay, so he goes to prison. He gets a DUI and a hit and run, the husband. And I get to sit with these truckers for 9 months while they're my bodyguards and taking me to the bar and making sure that I'm safe. And they're preaching to me God. We're watching movies about ego. This one, it's called Revolver, and it really talked about the ego, and it's kind of cool. Of course, I didn't have a God, but theirs was kind of cool. You know, the stories that they talked about angels and how he just showed up on the road for them and sent people to them. And so seeds are getting planted. I'm also at this time, I'm in the doctors. I have anemia, and I'm getting iron infusions. I can no longer take vitamins because the drinking has basically made my body not make red blood cells anymore. So I'm going for weekly infusions, and my doctor is asking me every week when I'm in there, how much are you drinking? I just drink on the weekends. You know, I don't drink during the weekdays, so just a little binging here and there. And he's showing me how it's declining, how these red blood cells are like all weird shape. And he's like, this is a little bit more than just drinking, you know, casually. And the husband gets out of prison, and we go right back to the bars. But this time, or we go right back into the chaos. I'm calling his parole officer to try to get him sober. Of course, I'm drunk, but I want him sober, you know, maybe because then I could get sober. I don't know, you know, my thought process on there. But I wanted them to save him, the parole officer. So just crazy chaos. Finally, I'm sitting in, so the weekend that I get sober, or that I make this decision, I'm sitting in a hotel room trying to detox him. I'm not drinking, but I'm trying to detox him, which I have no idea what this looks like, but he's convincing me that I'm detoxing him while he's drinking. And we go back to his house. Yeah, I know a little bit more now. We go back to his house. He's living with some people, and they do not like me at all. I had pretty much been forbidden to go to their house any longer because the cops and parole officers are always showing up at their house because I'm always tattletaling. And they see me parked in their driveway, and they call the cops. And the cops come, and they want to charge me with a felony trespassing. And I'm trying to convince them that my ex-husband had told me that I could come there. He finally came out and did tell them. They told me to leave and never come back to the property. I go over to my trucker friend's house, and we decide to go to Patty's, which is now Buzzy's, but it's Patty's. And I'm sitting there, and you know, we had a couple drinks. I always drink 151 by this time, something mixed with 151. And somehow I ordered a beer. And I'm sitting there, and I drank this thing halfway through. And I literally, I mean, I hear that. Is it halfway empty or halfway full? I couldn't answer that question. It was just halfway. And I just had this thought that I needed to go to an AA meeting. I needed to go by myself. I needed to check myself into Ridgeview. I call my friend. She's living with me. And I told her that I don't want to die, but I'm going to die if I don't get help. And I went over to Hal Place, and I picked up a white chip. And that is, to this day, my first and only white chip. I went the next day to Ridgeview, and I started the program of recovery. I was in a dual program, one because I have the PTSD, and a lot of other issues and also for the alcohol. And they told me that I needed to get a sponsor. And here the man and I are back and forth. And, you know, I don't have a relationship with women, but they want me to get a female sponsor. And I want the husband to be my sponsor. Thank God he was not my sponsor. I found somebody else. And she started to take me through the steps and telling me her story. And from there, we started reading the big book from the first page. And doctor's opinion didn't mean really much to me. It didn't mean much to me until I was reading more about alcoholism. And I started reading the ways that people drink and how they drink. And that hit me. But the jaywalker. The jaywalker is who really I resonated with, because that I just felt was me. So I finally got step one. Finally, took a while. Let me go to my steps because my memory does not do very good. So, I finally realized my life was power, that I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. You know, it wasn't only about alcohol. It was unmanageable because of relationships. It was unmanageable because of food, gambling, codependency. There were so many layers of it that I had to finally realize that it's not just alcohol. I mean, I was powerless over God. I didn't even have a relationship over that. I didn't even think I would get one. Step two, slowly came to believe. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I was hearing in the room that we go back to the age that we were when we drank. And I kind of had this fear because, see, I knew that I started really drinking and nipping when I was 7. And I had this fear that I was going to go back to 7 years old mentally. I mean, that's still, the fog was still in there. But I thought, God, I'm going to go back to 7. And I remember going to this workshop. I don't remember where it was, but I think Cartersville was putting it on. And it was an emotional sobriety workshop. And Michael E. is a speaker, and she was there talking about God and about sanity and about acceptance. And what she was talking about, which I probably won't even remember what to say right now, but I resonated with her. And I was able to get step two. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Again, another one that took a while because I was so codependent with my ex-husband that I was putting him first, and I think I went to meet the sponsor every Tuesday, and every time we went back to the page about, you know, just dependency, and I was in this meeting, and they were reading on page 98, "We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependency upon others ahead of dependency on God." And wow, that hit me. I was sitting back there, and you know, it kind of makes sense. But it was when the sponsor, she took me to go file the divorce papers that were already signed that I was holding on to, and took me to see a man that was dying in our program, Gene. She took me to spend the day with him while he was sitting in a hospital. And probably never getting out. And the service work that started to change that relationship. And I started to have more of a relationship with God. I did step four. It took a while. I kind of get direction, but when I get direction, I kind of like go outside of the box and I do all these curves and I started listening to Joe and Charlie. She gave me direction, but I wanted to make it much bigger. So I end up with, probably 99 pages of resentments. But anyway, it was crazy and I'm talking real small, but I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anybody. But, we went through step five and I definitely felt better, but I still, I don't know. For some reason, it's quickly, slowly. I did feel better. Went through six and seven. And, I'm a runner. I've ran in all my relationships. I've ran from a lot of responsibilities. And I ran from the sponsor and decided to go to another sponsor. And another relationship, and then that sponsor decided that they couldn't work with me as long as I was dependent on another relationship. And then I ended up finding another sponsor. And I've been with her for about 4 years now, 3.5, 4 years now. And we've been able to work through these steps. And we go through the traditions. There's a program, or there's a sheet. We do this every single time we get together. It's taken us about 2 years. It's called the second surrender. You should be able to go through it. Like you do the steps, you should be able to go through it in probably, 12 months, take one a month. This has been 2 years, but I am a truck driver, and I'm not always home. And we are finally step 11 on that. We take the traditions and the steps and we work them together and work those into our lives. We also did Dave and Polly P's. They have a relationship one. We started that for a while. But when I ended my last relationship, which I didn't get into, we stopped doing the relationship one and just spend more time on the steps and on the steps and the traditions. I did relapse into marriage one more time. This time it was an amends that I made. I would never recommend making amends to a boyfriend that you ran from 30 years prior, but my memory did not remind me as to why I left him before. And for some reason, I kind of questioned it. I thought, well, maybe I was always drunk at that time and maybe he was okay. So I make amends to this guy, and 2 weeks later, we're married. He's a truck driver, and he's suggesting that we go out on the road together and get my CDL. And I call up my sponsor, and I'm like, I got this crazy idea. I have him asking me to get my CDL and go in team, and I have another friend that's telling me, hey, you can come and work for me. It just so happens he brings it up out of the blue. And it's really, this is one of my trucker friends. I've been friends with them for years, and they never said that. But somewhere out of the blue, synchronicity, we were just talking about it. I call her up, and she's like, Sarah, I think that's great. I'm like, huh? No, you're supposed to tell me no, And she's like, no, something is telling me that this is what you need to do. And, okay. So I go and I get my CDL. I am the top female from that class. I was the first one that made it through. I didn't do good in school. I was in remedial classes. I was the first one that made it through this school all the way through to taking the DDS test. And, they've never had a woman do it all the way in the first try. So that was really awesome. I had a lot of pride towards that. I did go out and get a job with this husband. We teamed for a month and a half, and didn't work. We're sitting in California, and we cannot work together. He put his hand on me, and I left the truck, and I did not know what to do. I left a great accounting career, and I'm kind of like, I don't want to go solo. But my dispatcher is telling me, Sarah, you can do this. You can do it. Just try. And I call my sponsor, and she said, Sarah, God is going to have this. Do it. just try it. And I did. And wow, that changed me. Where I used to be so dependent on other people and I couldn't be alone, I learned how to be alone. I learned that I have a lot of strength where I thought that I didn't, where I was weak. I learned how to ask questions because of what I learned in here, to pick up that phone and ask people for help. I was able to do this as a truck driver, as a solo female truck driver. I started asking my network out there, you know, when I'm sitting there stuck and don't know how to do a landing gear or fifth wheel, and they're helping me. And I did relapse two more times to go into the truck with him as a team. Did not work. The insanity is that the first time, you know, I think, okay, you know, I'm never going to go back there. I do it again and again until finally it hurts so much. It's kind of like the character defects. We keep them until it hurts so much. That's what it was like. And I finally ended that marriage in October. And right now I'm trying very hard to stay single. I do mess up once in a while. And I did kind of test a relationship and it didn't work, and it's okay. I think in that I'm learning rejection. Rejection has been a hard one for me, and this is the first time that really I was rejected in a relationship like that, and that was good because it's like baby steps. I'm learning this, and it's okay that I've been rejected and I don't feel abandoned, and I get right back up. And you know, thank God I have this program and I have my career now that I'm strong and I'm good. I love being a truck driver. I'm good at it. I was good in accounting, but I love this. The job that I have today is because of this program. I was sharing in a meeting and some guy in the meeting heard me speaking about being a truck driver, and he works for this company and recruited me. And it gave me balance. I used to be out two to six weeks at a time. I didn't get to see my grandchild or my kids. I wasn't able to come to meetings. And this job, I'm out for 3 to 4 days a week. I'm making the same, if not more, income. I come to meetings every single week. I'm able to take on sponsees again. I'm able to work the steps and meet with my sponsor and meet with my friends and come here. I mean, just this week, I was able to come back to the CIR Club on Sundays. I haven't been able to do that. They just changed a schedule on me, which I was kind of like, kind of bummer. Now I can't leave out until Monday mornings. And then I was like, wait a second. I get my Sunday morning, this like church, my 9:30 in the morning meeting. And that's awesome. That's, again, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Anyway, that's kind of where I am. That's my story. And thank you.